Hello, and welcome to the Using the Tools panel discussion. My name is Diane, and I am a compulsive overeater, anorexic bulimic, and part of your panel for today. While the topic of this panel is using the tools, and the speakers all have experience in this particular area, this panel is open to everyone. We will each introduce ourselves and qualify and speak for 20 minutes on the topic of using the tools of this program. Many of us use some but not all of the tools. Some of the tools are harder to pick up than others. We will each speak on our experience with this process. Is there someone in the audience who would be willing to time this panel discussion today? Ziva, thank you. Please give each speaker a 10-minute warning, then a 5-minute warning, and finally a 2-minute warning. Thank you very much. Okay, our first speaker is Chris.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Chris, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I've been coming to Overeaters Anonymous since November 22, 2001. My current abstinence date is July 28, 2002. Before I came to OA, not while I was in OA, I reached my top weight of at least 437 pounds, and I had a 66-inch waist. This is the only thing I've ever done that's lasted this long. I am 5 feet 10 inches tall. I weighed 164 pounds this month. I think it's 164 point something, but I don't remember the tenths. I'm 5 feet 10 inches tall. I'm 56 years old, and I'm really grateful to this program. This is the only thing I've ever done that's lasted this long. So I'm going to share some visuals because sometimes I need to see to believe. I have my original wedding ring here from 1982, and I also have a ring I can still fit into this now, this ring. I actually had to put some labels on it because in the winter, I live in the Chicago area, my fingers get smaller when the cold weather, and sometimes I'll lose it in my glove or something, it'll just fall off. It fits, but not so much in the winter. This other ring is almost twice the size of it, and the other ring almost fits inside of it, but I had this ring made when I was nearing my top weight, 300 and something, and then I got too big for this. I used to say that the ring got too small for me, but that was a lie because the ring never changed size. I did. So I can pass those around if anyone would like to see those. Here are my pictures. Would you be kind enough to take those? And all those pictures in there are of me. Except for the one that's of my graduation cake from 1973. So the last thing I want to share is my belt. I'm going to have to put the microphone down for a second, but I just want to share. This is the belt I wore when my waist was at its biggest, and I just want to do a display for you. If I put the buckle on the floor, it's touching the floor now, and I'm 5 feet 10 inches tall, this is how big I was around. It's over my ear, and this is about how much sticks out of my 36-inch waist belt now. And then if I put this on, you can see that's how much more there was of me. I lived it. And I still have a hard time believing it. So I just want to share those because some people found them helpful just to see where I've come from. Because I don't want to go back there again. And those pictures, I've heard other people say, you know, I don't want to pose for them again. So hopefully I'll continue to use these tools. A tool I use a lot is the tool of the telephone. Like, I've been to the OA birthday party before, and I reached out to a bunch of Californian people that I knew and said, you know, hope to see you at the birthday party, or I sent them a text or an email or something. I did almost all of this through my phone. Another thing I use the phone for, other than regular outreach calls or to check in with my sponsor, is to get a pre-approved holiday list of callers, like the Monday before Thanksgiving, I would call a bunch of people, would you be open to getting calls on Thursday? oh, I'll be with family, but if I can answer, I will. Or, no, please don't call me because I don't want to. See, then I know, and I've got a bank of people. I build up my network. That's another reason why I came from Illinois. I live in Melrose Park, which is 14 miles straight west of downtown Chicago, where I work. I've built up some relationships here, but my main goal when I come to something like this is, yes, to attend the sessions and be part of it and be of service. I worked at registration. Like, I just volunteered for this because someone was not able to make it, and someone asked me, and just being willing to do that. But to build up that network, because I know there's going to be spiritual deposits I'll need to make today for the spiritual withdrawals. So coming to something like this is a meeting. That's one of our tools, too. And I don't have to be in the meeting all the time. If I can't hear someone or I'm too cold, like people see me walking around with my overcoat from Chicago, because I'm cold. I don't have all that padding. And, you know, it's honoring my own system, you know, attending the meeting and being present. If I'm shivering and my hands are like brittle because it's so cold to me, I'm not going to be present. And that's not serving the meeting well. Another tool I use is a plan of eating. And I write it in my daily planner down an entire column. And then when I eat my food, I line through it. This way, at the end of the day, I'll look at it and I'll say, oh, well, I've eaten all the food I allowed myself today that, you know, I've held myself accountable. And if anything, you know, goes a little wonky or awry and I want to share that with my sponsor, I just share it. Even if I don't want to share it, like, you know, I just say this is what's going on and, you know, I wrote it in and I'm holding myself accountable and, you know, I weigh in once a month and it goes up, it goes down. I'm a compulsive overeater. I always want it to be less every month. But at 164 pounds, at 56 years old and 5 feet 10 inches tall, if I lost, say, 2-3 pounds and then 2-3 pounds and then you can pretty much see that I wouldn't meet OA's definition for abstinence, eating to approach or maintain a healthy weight. Because if I got down to 119 or 67 pounds, would that be low enough for me? Would 8 pounds, 7.5 ounces, my birth weight, would that be low enough? No, I don't know. So I kind of realize that there's going to be fluctuations, checking in, submerging my ego and saying, my weight will vary, you know. And being honest about it, weighing in once a month so it's a check, but not weighing in because that gives it too much power, or weighing in every day. Oh, all right, I've had a bowel movement. Okay, now I'm going to weigh in again, you know, see what difference that made. I used to do stuff like that. And that doesn't keep me in a state of relaxed stillness, which is where I want to be. Another tool I use a lot, and I'm trying to get back into it more because I was so into it when I first got abstinent, is literature. Sometimes I will combine several tools in one. I will get on the phone and read someone the For Today or Voices of Recovery reading, which really doesn't take long, into their voicemail, because most often I get voicemails. And I just say, I'm thinking of you today. Here's the reading. And I will give a like one or two line take on, oh, I so relate to this. Like the reading the other day, many strokes fell giant oaks. That was in For Today. And I'm like, yeah, I don't have to do this program all at once. I don't share for 16 minutes and call them back 14 times to fill up their voicemail with Chris talking about recovery. And I don't want to make it a burden on someone. I want to offer them the recovery that's helpful to me. That's also service. And that would be the one tool I think transcends and overarches almost every other tool. Service, going to a meeting. It supports the meeting and keeps it viable and live. Service, calling someone, would they have picked up the phone? Am I going to sit there drumming my fingers on the table? Wait, why is no one calling me? I am on the we care list. When am I going to get a call? I ask myself, who have I called? And without an expectation. Because if I'm calling someone only to get a call back, I am calling for the wrong reason. Because that's all tied up with expectation. I'm calling for me because I have a deadly, killing, fatal disease. And abstinence to me is the most important thing in my life. God-given abstinence without exception. And abstinence to me is 5 food types and 2 behaviors that cause me problems. Either page 44 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous or page 2 to 3 of the OA 12 and 12. Describes what I need to abstain from. And the 5 food types are sugary dessert items, peanut butter, pizza, restaurant Chinese food, restaurant Mexican food, and the 2 behaviors are starving myself and laxative abuse. I haven't done any of those since July 28, 2002, and any time I have ever started any one of those, I could not stop. So those really caused me problems. I'm open to adding something to that list if something becomes a problem, but I don't see anything on that list suddenly coming off. How am I doing? Thank you. So service, the issue I personally have with service is I like to do service, but I want to do a healthy amount of service. And sometimes that doesn't really resemble the amount of service that's required in our area. Because we need a lot of people to do service, and if I'm the only one, and I'm going to do the newsletter, and then I want to run for a board position at the intergroup, and then I want, okay, now I'm going to be depleted, and I could overeat over that, and I don't want to overeat over anything. So sometimes, like last time, we had no one for the newsletter. I said, well, if I get elected to this position, I won't be doing the newsletter. I just want to put it out there, and they elected me to do a certain position, so I didn't do the newsletter, and for the first time in years, we had no newsletter, and it only comes out 3 times a year. Could I have done it? Yeah. But what's it going to cost me? Can I afford that resentment? Because you know, when my spiritual credit card gets run for the charge of what doing that newsletter would have cost me, it's going to scream. And they're going to like want to cut that spiritual credit card in half, whoever the God's cashier would be if I were to do that amount of service. It doesn't kill me or anything, but it could lead me back to overeating, which would kill me. So doing a healthy amount of service, a sane amount of service, trying to find a way to stay in that state of relaxed stillness. I'm not talking about being a piece of wood and inanimate and not caring. But feeling my emotions. Yeah, when my friend died last month, there's nothing I could do about it. He was engaged to be married. He was 50. No warning. Bleeding in his brain. I told myself, and I was just talking with someone before this meeting about, it's what I tell myself about that. Crying with my wife and my 2 living children on the phone about how I don't want that to happen to us. Staying abstinent is the tool, even though it's not an official tool, it's, I guess, through a plan of eating and, you know, a service that I do. That is the best service I do every day, is staying abstinent. But crying with them on the phone and having my 22-year-old son, Dad, you don't have to cry. I'm like, I know I don't have to, and I probably need to go because I'm walking in downtown Chicago towards my job, and people everywhere on the street, and I'm like, they're looking at me. I don't even know if they were looking at me. It's what I was telling myself. And why can't I just tell him I love him? Why do I have to throw junk in there about, oh, he's going to judge me. I'm going to appear vulnerable. I'll be weak. Well, we all know it's weakness, not strength, that binds us to each other and somehow gives us the ability to do what we cannot do alone. Writing is one of my least favorite tools, but I write my food plan. Why don't I like it? Because it makes things very real. There's no denying it. If I've written it down and that's in my handwriting, I own that. Because I don't write things down that really aren't true. I mean, as opposed to writing my food plan now, what I used to write, and I know some people have heard this before, is IWIWD, an abbreviation for I wish I were dead. Because that's how I used to wake up. For me, this is a disease of self-hatred. And every day I woke up, I wanted to die because I couldn't deal with the food. Now, that's God's business. He shows me what would be a sensible choice. I try to do that. If my weight starts fluctuating a couple months in a row, one direction or the other, I make a small adjustment. Does that sound like a compulsive overeater? Small adjustments? No, I wanted to revolutionize everything and do. Well, that doesn't work for me. Because then I become so rigid that something does end up breaking. And now we've got a major situation on our hand. People used to say, well, you know, if it's a difference of 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pounds, you know, like that, that's the time to do something and take action. Don't wait till it gets to 30 or, you know, because I weighed 437. I mean, that is a 273-pound difference from what I am here. I mean, I used to break chairs. Thank you. So I've got 5 minutes. I don't know. I'm wondering, are there tools I'm missing that I haven't touched on at all? Can anybody think of anything? Meditation. Well, I know it's not a formal tool, but I am not the best at sitting still. You know, that it says in the OA 12 and 12, we need much practice in the art of sitting still, the action of that. I tried it once recently. I mean, I've tried it many, many times, and I do some. But sometimes it's very rote. I'll kneel down bedside morning and night. Anything involving bed, going to bed, getting up from bed. And I will thank God for the miracle of abstinence. Just thank him before I even start asking for anything. And I usually don't even ask for anything. I just say, if you let me know what it is you want me to do, then I'll be able to do it. And I really don't want to do certain things sometimes. Like tomorrow, I'll give you one example. Here's something I meditated on. My son has something going on, which when I made my plane reservation, he didn't have going on. I want to be there to support him, but if I take my 1:30 flight because I lose 2 hours, I won't be getting home until 7:30 and where he is until about 8:30. But if I get on an earlier flight, because his thing is at 6, if I get on an earlier flight, it's going to cost me $75. Now, I will tell you this. In 1999, my 14-year-old son, my third child, passed away. Suddenly, they didn't ever figure out why. And here's what cleared it up for me. If I could have 1 hour to be there to support him if he were still here and it cost me $75, how quickly do you think I would pay that? If abstinence cost me $75 a day and I didn't have to do all this and my life would be, I might be tempted to pay that. But knowing how much I've gotten from this program, I probably wouldn't pay that. Because some days, what I put into this program may be not worth $75 in terms of cha-ching, ring it up on the cash register, but spiritually it does cost me quite a bit sometimes. Being in the state of acceptance, which is not to be confused with approval or agreement, and not having that expectation, not being there tomorrow and having him say, oh, Dad, I'm so glad you came. No, that's not why I'm there. Why am I there? I'm there because I'm his father. And I want him to know that I support him. He may or may not appreciate that. I'm doing it for me. I'm not going to put that off on him. So I would say that's another service. I do pray, and it's knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry it out. And the initial prayer was, let me be willing to go to any lengths. And then I found out later what the lengths were. Thank God it worked like that, because if I knew up front all the lengths that I would end up going to, I might not have been willing to do it. So I'm glad, like speaking here today, this is not the end of the world. It's 20 minutes. I mean, get it in perspective, Chris. Come on. That's what I tell myself. It's like, someone asked me, I'll do it. It's not a perfect share. It doesn't need to be. So with that, I pass. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Diane. I'm a compulsive overeater, anorexic, bulimic, and very glad to be on this panel. Thank you, Chris. I would like to start by listing the tools of recovery as listed by the OA trustees. Plan of eating, sponsorship, meetings, telephone, writing, literature, action plan, anonymity, and service. These are a different wording, slightly different from when I came in 1987. My abstinence date is July 14th, 1987. And back then, we did not have OA literature. I learned the steps out of the AA 12 and 12. That's what we used in step meetings. And, of course, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, back then third edition, was our reference book and obviously the originator of our program. What's interesting to me, initially we talked about abstinence in here, and I don't need to know the discussions that moved it to plan of eating, but for me, abstinence, I abstain from behaviors that I used to indulge in, which for me is part of my plan of eating. I was a dieter, a diet pill user and abuser, a laxative user, and I think the word is pathorexic for chewing your food and spitting it up. None of these things worked for more than a month, although I indulged in them for years, particularly the pathorexia, till I got into program. And in program, I had an abstinence that excluded all of those behaviors. However, for me, in my plan of eating, I am allowed to have anything I want to, because I spent so much time depriving myself that that's a setup for me. It's very different depending on where people come from. And I will tie plan of eating in with action plan. And the interesting thing about action plan is in the olden days, prayer and meditation was a tool. And now I consider it part of action plan. But in the for me, under action plan, I do my AEIOUs and I turn them over to my sponsor. A stands for abstinence. E stands for exercise. I stands for what did I do for myself, which allows me to own those things I did well, which we talk about in here. And, you know, that is where my self-esteem grew from. O, what did I do for others? What was my service? And U, what did I uncover about myself? I got a new sponsor a couple of years ago, and I absolutely love her. And it's with her that I started doing this in a way that's been incredibly helpful for me. So the letters are A-E-I-O-U. And if anybody wants to talk more about them, I'm more than happy to. But it doesn't take long. You know, it can be this much space on an email, and that's how I send them to her. And each of those things helps me understand, and it includes a lot of the tools. The plan of eating is covered in abstinence. Again, I get to put anything I want under action plan. So exercise goes under action plan. And, you know, interestingly enough, I consider what I did for myself service for me, service to me. And obviously what I do for others is service. And it can be holding a door open for somebody. It can be asking a person who's in a wheelchair or with a cane if they need help. and it feels really good. Also, when I first got into program in New York, I was fortunate enough to fall in with a group of women. There were 8 of us who all started within about 3 months of each other. And we all went to the same meeting and every week, no matter what. And we all went out for Chinese dinner, you know, OA people, at the same restaurant, at the same table, for 2 years every Sunday night. And that was a meeting combined with fellowship, combined with a plan of eating for all of us. And it really gave me a way to connect with people. I was such an isolator. In those days, obviously before cell phones, I unplugged my phone, my can't even think of the name, answering machine for the weekend, and the phone, and unless I wanted to call somebody. I didn't want them to call me. I soon after I got into the program in those days, again, something called call waiting started. And it was between that and the quarters for the phone booths, it was really a way to keep in touch with people. I discovered that the more meetings I went to, the better I felt. And we have the supreme luxury in places like LA and New York, I don't know about Chicago, probably, of having meetings every day all over the place. And now we have the additional tool of phone meetings. There's a new one that started Tuesday night. You can call in. It's a speaker meeting, so somebody shares, and then there are questions. If anybody wants that information, I can give it to you. But it's a great way to access a meeting. You can be anywhere in the world and call in on Skype. To me, these are all meetings. There are meetings online, and they're great ways to maintain the maintain your program. And the longer I've been in program, I've heard this term, and I really love it, which is, I want what I have. Which is unbelievable, because I wanted to kill myself, saved all the pills that all the doctors gave me because they thought that the answer to my problems was pills. And I was going to kill myself when I turned 30. I had lost my mother to suicide 40 years ago next week, and I figured I had tried for 13 years. That was enough. I couldn't stop any of those food behaviors I described earlier. I was lonely. I was living in New York. I was isolated. I hated myself. I hated my life. I believed I was dumb, stupid, and ugly. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I really had no idea what was wrong with me. I heard somebody mention in passing, if I can't lose weight, I'm going to have to go to Overeaters Anonymous. And somehow, by the grace of God, in all the steel armor that I had up, there was one little chink that some light could come into, that I could hear those words, Overeaters Anonymous. Looked them up in the phone book and found a meeting probably 10 months later, because I never forgot that. I'd heard about AA. I'd actually been around at a convention, and I got furious because they were all laughing and happy and drinking soft drinks. And I didn't understand. I couldn't imagine that we were all humans, that I was like them, because they had this thing that I had frankly never had. And I saw that in the meetings. We talk about the light goes on. What we mean is the light in other people's eyes, the light in people's eyes when they work the program. I see that at meetings. I hear that when I listen to people share, when I listen to people speak at conventions and CDs, which I'm always yakking about how great CDs are to have in your car. I listen to AA CDs as well, because that's the mother program, and they're incredibly helpful. Step CDs, program CDs, big book CDs, really helpful for me in getting a different way of looking at this. So meetings have been and are really important to me, no matter where I've been in the world, which includes South Africa and Rome. The one place I didn't find any meetings was in the sand dunes of the south of Morocco in the desert. But I knew God was in the desert. I had email. I had CDs, well, I actually had a CD player back then, and I had program. I had my For Today. I had the first 164 pages of the Big Book, and I had a way to carry the program wherever I was. And that the Big Book talks about that, about people getting sober no matter where they are in the world, and that was in the late 30s and 40s. And onwards. And we can have a plan of eating, have this program no matter where we are. The telephone I've spoken about. I was taught early on, I should say it was suggested to me, but in those days we didn't say suggested so much as we said, you're going to do this. And I was told to make 3 phone calls a day. And some of those people from that dinner in 1987 are the people I still call today. And that's a gift of this program. And that's because they and I kept showing up. And we talk about going to regular meetings regularly, which means going to the same meetings once you find meetings you like over and over again so that people get to know you and us. Because for me, one of the ways of isolation was I'd sit in the back of a meeting, come late, leave early, go to another meeting, come late, leave early, go to another meeting, come late, leave early. That, for me, was no way to work the program. And for me, finding fellows who I had a connection with, which I got through meetings and through doing service. Service, for me, when I didn't understand the concept of service, I didn't think I had enough to give. My first service was treasurer, because I like money and I'm comfortable with it. And that was really helpful. I actually didn't have to say anything. I could just pass the basket, take it, smile, go count the money. That was really helpful. In the old days, we didn't have literature like we do now. We just all brought our own 12 and 12s and big books to the meetings. And I've done literature service, and I love it. I love seeing newcomers come in. I love giving them our newcomer pack. I love talking about the literature. The pamphlets have been incredibly helpful for me when they first came out. I used to keep a little fold-out pamphlet that had the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, how it works, and the preamble to OA. And I kept it in my wallet. And if ever we got to a meeting and that binder wasn't there, I had it in my purse. And I remember somebody saying if she couldn't get anybody on the phone and she couldn't get to a meeting and she was in the middle of nowhere, she would read a phone list. She'd read the newsletter or she'd read a phone list. And frankly, I've actually done that, looked down the names of people and felt better because I know they're out there. I'll take anything as a tool. I really will. Writing. For me, writing included working the steps, writing them down, turning them over to a sponsor, inventories, which I've done, and every so often in a meeting, there are some meetings that are a little more raucous than others, let me put it that way. And some of the more raucous meetings, somebody is sharing about something and you'll hear somebody mutter from the back, write about it. And, that's real. It really helps. I have my sponsor say, do a 4th step on it. Do a pro and con list, which I think is very funny because my last name is Con. So I call it the pros and dies. But it's, you know, what works and what doesn't about whatever. Again, that all for me, you know, the great sort of benefit of this plan of action umbrella that is now on the list of tools is that you can put anything in there. And literature, I've spoken about briefly. I've read the Big Book numerous times cover to cover. I usually start in January, and every year, my old third edition, I have one year I underlined. I made up the rule that I had to underline one line on every page. I read a page a day. I read 2 pages a day, excuse me. I had to underline on each page a line that spoke to me. Didn't matter what it was, but it meant I had to pay enough attention to choose something that spoke to me. One year it's in pencil, another year it's in purple felt pen, another year it's in blue felt pen, another year it's in green felt pen. And there's very few, maybe 3 pages in the whole book, I couldn't find anything that related to. So I just, you know, pick a sentence. And it's wonderful to sort of flip back through that. I don't write notes in margins. I do it in my OA 12 and 12, which I love. And working with sponsees through the steps, especially for the first time, I have them read the OA 12 and 12 and the AA 12 and 12 and underline whatever speaks to them. And we go over it together. And I find it really helpful to, again, use the source book of AA and use the OA 12 and 12 because it helps. Sometimes some of these concepts, for me, help if I attack them from more than one point of view. And that ties into sponsorship, which I love. I love the program. The work I had to do was when I first came in to believe that I had anything that could be helpful to people. And my sponsor at the time said, if you have one day of abstinence, you have something to give somebody, which surprised me, thank you, because I wanted it to be perfect. But I've learned in here that perfection is the enemy of good, which I love. And I will talk about prayer and meditation under the umbrella of action plan. I couldn't meditate. I remember trying probably 20 years ago, sitting on my living room carpet with a timer and sitting there for 3 minutes and having so many thoughts go through my head that I thought this is stupid, which was my usual response when I didn't understand something. I now know that we have at least 60,000 thoughts a day. So 86,000 odd seconds in a day, which tells me how busy our brains get. Probably the 20,000 is sleeping, that we don't have so many conscious thoughts anyway. And what has happened with meditation, my sponsor at the time took me to a meditation workshop. I wouldn't have gone. I know I wouldn't have gone. Because I didn't know what to do or how to do it, and I felt uncomfortable. She took me to a meditation workshop in New York on July 3rd, 2003, and I've been meditating every day since then. I absolutely love it. I have a method I learned. There's probably 1,000 methods, I'm sure. Doesn't matter, in my opinion, what you do as long as you try it. And you set the, you know, for me, it was set the timer for 3 minutes. My mind went all over the place. And I sat there anyway till the timer went. And eventually when I learned to focus, for me it's head-to-toe meditation, I would sort of start on my, you know, top of my head, hair, forehead, eyebrows, eyes. I'd get to sort of my cheekbones and I'd start thinking about something else. The timer would go off and I'd say, I only got to my cheekbones. Doesn't matter, tomorrow I'll try again. And now I get through the whole body and I do it for much longer. 12, 15, 20 minutes. I'd meditate with women in my neighborhood Friday mornings for 40 minutes, which seems endless, but it's not. So I'll wrap up by just saying anonymity is incredibly important to keep what we hear here in confidence. And I also want to let newcomers know, if there's anybody here who's new, that don't worry if this makes sense or not. Please just keep coming back, because for me it really was like a foreign language at first. I certainly didn't understand what these tools were. I didn't understand the language. I didn't understand what turn it over meant. I will say that I also, under plan of action, I email people. I text people. I have a God box that my niece, who's now 18, made when she was 4 for me, and I put everything in it. I write about it, and I put it in it. Because I need to turn things over and over again. I also, for me, under plan of action, the ability to identify and feel feelings is a tool for me. Because I didn't used to know what I felt. I just knew I wanted to eat. I'll wrap up by talking about my last year, because I had to use all the tools. In January, one of my best friends from when I was 19 died 2 months after her diagnosis. March, I broke my ankle. I heard it snap all over the place. Had major surgery, immobile for 3 months. June, found my mother's suicide note after 40 years that I'd never seen. July, our house was broken into. All my jewelry that I didn't have on was stolen, along with some other things. August, one of the girlfriends from the Sunday night dinner, 1987, her cancer came back. September, I had to cancel the trip to Rome. October, I got notice from my New York apartment that after 25 years, they're going to evict me because I'm not there 183 days a year. December, my therapist of 30 years, who has really been a mother to me, has diagnosed with a brain tumor and has been in the hospital since then. That was 1 year in recovery. And every single time, I was able to call somebody, go to a meeting, listen to a meeting, make phone calls, write about it, put it in my God box, pray, meditate about it, and really show up for each of those events. And I used to think that my feelings would kill me. They don't kill me. They pass like subway trains in a station. And this program has given me joy, which I never knew before, and a life beyond my wildest dreams, and really rocketed it into a fourth dimension. Thank you very much for letting me share.
I'm Josh, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And thank you, Chris and Diane. Wow, that was amazing. So I have some pictures to prove that I'm a compulsive overeater, which I'll pass around and hopefully we'll get later. And got abstinence a couple months before Chris. It was June 29th of 2002, so it's been 13 years, one day at a time. And I'll talk briefly about my story and background, and then really I want to talk about the focus of the workshop, which is the tools. I am a real, real compulsive overeater. As you can see over there, my top weight was around 260 pounds. When I came in, I had just gotten to college, I was going into my junior year of college, and it was in college where I got really bad with the food. I would go to the dorm and eat the all-you-could-eat food, you know, at the dorm, and then get to the drive-thru and eat double portions of food at the drive-thru. And then oftentimes I would go to the drive-thru again or the donut shop and that kind of thing. And every day it was, you know, I'd be eating a meal and I'd be thinking, what am I going to have next? And it got to the point where I'd be eating so much that I would literally be in physical pain from how much I was eating. I would have diarrhea. I would be sitting on the toilet and I'd say, Josh, you can't eat like this anymore. You can't do this to yourself. And then, you know, 45 minutes later, hour and a half later, when I was physically able to eat again, I'd be eating. So that's what it was like. And, you know, we make plans and God laughs, right? So this morning, my father, who I'm probably not supposed to break his anonymity, but he was supposed to be on this panel as well, and he got sick last night and was unable to come, and Chris so graciously stepped in, and that's God, because Chris, you know, and Diane were just talking about stuff that I need to hear. And of course, I, you know, would have loved to have embarrassed my dad, which I'm trying to do right now. Not to cross too much, but what, you know, what Chris was talking about, being asked to do the service, it's like we say yes. We just say yes, and that's what I've been taught in this program. So I do want to talk about the tools, and I'll get into that. I thought it was really helpful reading something a little bit before, and this is from the abridged part of the tools, and I'll just read the top part, which is, we use tools, a plan of eating, sponsorship, meetings, telephone, writing, literature, action plan, anonymity, and service, to help us achieve and maintain abstinence and recover from our disease. Many of us have found we cannot abstain from compulsive overeating or compulsive eating unless we use some or all of OA's 9 tools of recovery to help us practice the 12 steps and 12 traditions. So, telephone is a big one, for me. I was taught early on with the telephone that we make calls when things are going well, so that when things aren't going well, we're still making calls. So it's not just that, okay, I'm driving past the drive-thru and I'm thinking about going there and I make a call. It's, I'm having, you know, a good abstinent day, clean day, and I'm still making the call just to check in on someone and see how they're doing. That way, and I've had this, where I have people that I can call late at night because I was a late night eater, where I will make a call at 11:30 and I'll say, hey, this is sounding like a good idea to me. And I'm able to talk to them, and through, you know, calling them and they're reminding me that there's something else going on. It's not about the food. It's that I'm trying to solve something else that I'm trying to do on my own. Usually it's me taking back my will, and I'm trying to solve it with the food. But because I'm making the calls anyways in general, it's not this 1,000-pound thing that when I really need it, I'm really not able to do, because when I get an idea, it's like, especially when it comes to the food, like, I got no chance. And I call my sponsor every day, because he has what I want. So I'll talk a little bit about sponsorship, but I did want to talk about him in terms of sponsorship, because he's somebody that makes more phone calls in this program than anybody I know. He's incredible. And he will call people all the time, from his home meetings that aren't coming to the meeting and check in on them. He will call his sponsees. My sponsor is not my first sponsor. I've had many sponsors, although he is the sponsor I've had for the longest amount of time. But I had many sponsors before him. And I had sponsors before him that it was like, you never called your sponsee. You always call your sponsor. If that's the role. The sponsee calls the sponsor. And it's about, you know, the willingness and so on. And I get it. And that was important for me to do when I was early. And I do call my sponsor. I call my sponsor every day. I'm typically the one calling him. But if I don't call him for a day or two, he will call me. And if he has sponsees even from years ago that he's sponsoring that he hasn't heard from, he will call them to check in. And every holiday, he calls me. And he calls all his sponsees, and he's got a lot of them. And he wishes happy holiday. And it's it works. I mean, because he has what I want. He has what I want, and that's why he's my sponsor. He has a relationship with his higher power that I want. He has a spiritual program that I want. He has a relationship with his family that I want. He is one of the most patient and understanding people that I've ever known. And he was not dealt an easy hand. He has a tough family situation. And he would never describe it like that to me. He would only see it as, you know, a blessing. And so I call him all the time, and I'll oftentimes ask for his advice on certain situations and certain stuff that's coming up. And he will never give me his advice. He will only share with me his experience, strength, and hope. So, you know, say, you know, well, Josh, do you want my experience? And I'm like, yeah, of course I want your experience. I've been calling you every day for like 9 years, you know. I want your experience. But then it's pretty much virtually always the same. It's always, well, my experience is if I write about it, right, one of the tools, and if I pray about it, my higher power will give me the answer. Simple. So, Josh, did you write about it? No. Did you pray about it? Well, you know, I called you. And I know that that's what I have to do pretty much 90% of the time. It's that simple. But it, you know, it's not always my, it's still not always my instincts. And that's why I call him to be reminded. And that's why I go to meetings to be reminded. And with the meetings, another thing that I was taught early on is to do service at meetings. And that's been huge for me, because that means I don't have to think about whether or not I'm going to go to the meeting. There's no debate. if I can physically be at the meeting, I'm going to be at the meeting because the meeting needs me because I have service. Makes it a lot easier than the debate that I would get into with my head if I have service. So my experience is that service is great. You know, what's the line? Service is slimming, you know? But it gets my butt there. And that's the most important part because the longer that I go without meetings, the more I start listening to my crazy head. It starts with going to less meetings and then I'm doing less prayer and meditation and doing less writing and doing less calling of the sponsor and then not necessarily picking up on my sponsees. You know, it's like it, you can see how it escalates. And then all of a sudden, I'm at the drive-through and I'm meeting X, Y, and Z and I'm fighting with my wife and I'm always right. You know, it's like it's everything. When I get to the meetings, it's like I know that I can sit there, I can listen. I can be quiet. I don't have to be connected at all with this thing. I can really just show up and be at a meeting. So I'm really grateful for people that do service at the meeting level and as well as the intergroup and world service as well to make it so that we get to have incredible meetings and incredible things like this OA birthday party. And how lucky so many of us are to live in Los Angeles, the birthplace of OA, and then to be able to have so many people come from across the country and across the world to be here once a year for this celebration. I feel so fortunate to be here and to have that to be part of my recovery today. Food plan. When I came in, it was like the way that I had that it was explained to me was I had my abstinence, which had to do with how much I ate and my bottom line, and then I have a plan of eating. And a plan of eating for me is really important because there are certain foods that when I start, I can't stop. I just can't. It talks about it in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and in the doctor's opinion, right? With when an alcoholic ingests alcohol, they get a physical reaction. They get a physical phenomenon of craving, physical cravings. When they start, they physically cannot stop. Well, for me, that's exactly the case with food. There are certain foods that when I start eating, I can't stop. Where one is too many, and too many is never enough. There isn't enough of X. There's just not. And so those foods I abstain from for today. And they haven't really changed since I came into program 13 years ago because it was very clear when I took a look at my past behaviors with these foods that anytime I'd get in the ring with them, I was going to lose. It was that simple. And it's easier. It's easier to abstain from them than to try to, you know, flirt with them. It really is. And for the most part, the obsession with those foods is lifted. I'm not thinking about that stuff. I remember it was like the other day, someone was like, oh, do you want this? And then, I forgot, you don't eat them. I'm like, yeah, no, it's fine. They're like, I'm really sorry. I'm like, don't be sorry. It's not a big deal. It's not for me. My favorite line is they always ask, you know, at the restaurants, do you want dessert? And I don't eat dessert today. So, you know, I'm like, oh, no, I got to drive. And people look at me like I'm crazy. But it's true. It's true because it's very intoxicating for me. What's the other line? You know, if I eat it, I break out in fat, you know. But in seriousness, you know, I really can't stop. I won't think about anything else, and I physically have a reaction. So my sponsor had me, with my food plan, put it out into three different lists, a red light list, yellow light list, and green light list. So I have my red light foods, which is what I kind of described right now, that once I start, I can't stop. I have yellow light foods, which are foods that may eventually need to be on the red light list, or more likely just foods that if I'm eating all the time, I need to really be careful. But occasionally I can have them moderately. And then the green light foods are the foods that you can imagine that what they would be that are not that exciting to me, but that I eat all the time, and that aren't usually an issue. And they tend to be healthier choices because I tend to not make the healthiest choices because I like the stuff that was cheap that would numb me out. And guess what? That stuff isn't necessarily healthy. So that's a little bit about my my food plan. For me, it's really important that I know what my food plan is and that my sponsor knows what my food plan is. That's really important. That way, I know when I'm abstinent. There's no gray area. And my sponsor knows when I'm abstinent. So I don't have to worry about that. That's just my experience. And that's what I always do with people that I sponsor. One of the first things I do with them is take an honest look at their abstinence and their food plan. And really go through it with them so that there is little gray area. It doesn't necessarily need to be like strict. And it's not going to be the same for everyone. So my food plan is different than my sponsors, and it's different than everyone I sponsor. Literally everybody that I sponsor and my sponsor, we all have different food plans because we have different behaviors. We have different, obsessions, you know, around the food. So that's just my experience. So anonymity. Anonymity is so important, this program, on so many levels, because when a newcomer comes into this program, it's so important that they don't have to feel like anyone else is going to find out that they've, you know, come here, that we are going to keep their anonymity, that if I want to break my anonymity to someone outside of program, that's okay. But I'm the only one, you know, that can do that. And if other people don't want to do that, then that's fine. And it'll happen all the time where I will run into someone, you know, with my wife who's, you know, not in program, and it's like, you know, how do you know that person? You know, well, we have a mutual friend, you know, or their friend, you know, of whoever. If it's not even, or if it's not my wife or someone else that I don't know, it's like, oh yeah, no, we're both friends. They're like, oh, who are you guys friends with? Oh, Bill W, you know, or whoever, and they won't know, you know, you can like, use some funny stuff, but it is, it really, is important in terms of, keeping it anonymous so that people feel comfortable. Also, so that there's no stars or VIPs. There's no spokesperson for OA. Because if we do that and we help people on a pedestal and they go out for whatever reason, then that reflects on the program. And that's not what we need. That's not what we want to be doing. It's really, the group, and all the decisions are made by the group. It's not made by any individual person, which really also helps with the, goes into the anonymity. So I'm grateful that it is, anonymous. Yeah, action plan was also something that like came in after I came into program. And I think that was, I'm pretty sure I was around when it changed from absence also to food plan and so on. So that's probably why I have so much of it kind of intertwined, for me. I've been to some meetings all over the world in incredible places. About 9 months into program, I was really nervous because I was going to be going and studying abroad in Australia, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And at my home meeting at the time, which is still my home meeting, the Serenity Sunday meeting at Roxbury Park in Beverly Hills, I still do service at that meeting. If anyone comes from out of town ever, feel free to come on a Sunday, call me. It's a really great meeting. And one of the people from the meeting came up to me before I went, when I expressed that I was concerned, and gave me a bunch of OA tapes. This is when we used to have cassette tapes. And I brought this Walkman with me, and I was listening to all these different conventions and different stuff while I was there. Then I found a meeting, a home meeting, out in Australia. It was on Saturdays. I had to take like 2 trains to get there. It took me about an hour. It was amazing. I got a sponsor, this woman. She listened to my food every day for 4 months. And then we worked step 6 and 7 together. I can't thank her enough for what she, did for me in my program. I did a big trip with my wife for 6 weeks where we did, 3 weeks in, Thailand and 3 weeks in China. I went to Thailand to an Overeaters Anonymous meeting that was in English. They were in the process of translating this book, The Overeaters Anonymous, 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, into Thai. Then I went to China where they didn't have any OA meetings, so I went to an AA meeting, which was also in English, because that's what it takes. It's going to any lengths. And these tools, they give me, they're tools. They give me the tools to be able to lead me back to the 12 steps so that I can, and the 12 traditions so that I can abstain for today. And that's what it is. So I'm really, really grateful for it. I also do some telephone meetings, which I find to be really helpful, as well. And those are really great because you can even, there'll be like 50, 100 people on these calls. And I'll end with one last really quick thing about the telephone meetings, which is at the end of the telephone meetings, they do a prayer. And what I started doing with my sponsor is now we end all our phone calls with a prayer. And I sponsor people and talk to them every day as well. And now we end all our phone calls with a prayer. And that keeps me going to my higher power. And sometimes we get each other's voicemail, me on my sponsor, more likely him on mine or, you know, and or with my sponsees, because I usually get him. And I'll leave a prayer on their machine or they'll leave a prayer on my machine at the end. And then it's great because when I'm listening to my voicemail, I get to say the prayer along with them as they're doing it. So, all right, that's it. Thanks.
Now is the time for questions and answers. Please raise your hand, and I will call on as many questioners as possible. Your questions can be directed at one person specifically or generally for the panel to answer. Please be aware that we are recording this panel, and when asking a question, your voice may be audible on the recording. And at 18 minutes, I guess 18 minutes of questions, we call for the final question. Who would like to ask the first question?
I think this may be a tools question. If it's not, please say you don't think it is. I'm asking all of you. I have four sponsees, one of whom drives me crazy, has been my sponsee for between 10 and 12 years now. We speak 45 minutes or an hour every week unless something really crucial has happened in her life, and then, of course, she calls additionally. Three-quarters of the time she calls, I'm just happy to be of service. I'm in a good enough place that I'm just happy to be of service. But one-quarter of the time she calls, which means once, sometimes twice a month, I pick up the phone and I say, oh, my God, here's an energy suck coming. And, you know, I don't know what to do. It is clear I have been of help to her. She's had other sponsors. She's never had a sponsor as long as me. She needs help, and I give her help. But it feels bad to me often enough that I'm wondering if there are tools that any of you think I could work on this one.
You may know this story, but this is the famous story of Bill W. And Lois where he couldn't get, because what, and I'll preface this with, I've had a lot of sponsees on the other spectrum where they won't get abstinent and I get really down on myself, right? Like for whatever reason, they don't get it and I am taking it on and I'm feeling responsible. Bill W. in the beginning, when he started A, was really having a hard, when he started, you know, doing this was having a hard time getting someone else sober. And then was doing all the service, doing all this stuff, and was sitting there complaining to his wife about it. And his wife said, well, are you sober? And she's like, he's like, yeah. So I would say, you know, are you abstinent? You know, is it working? You know, are you abstinent? And so on that sort of peripheral level, like something is working, but then there's also the balance of boundaries, with sponsees as well. If you're not, if it's a amount of time that you're not able to give, then saying, you know, look, I can talk to you for, you know, this X amount of time, and so on. And that is a completely, okay thing for, at least in my experience, to be able to say to a sponsee that, look, you know, I'm very busy. I sponsor a lot of people. I want to help you, but, you know, I need you to, do it in this amount of time. And if that means that you need to really focus, you know, how you want to say it by doing writing and so on ahead of time, you know, at least that's my experience, then that we can do it, or we can try it this way, and so on. But that would be my initial two cents.
Thanks, Josh. Thank you for the question. A couple of things came to mind, and I'll just list them. One is I often say to people, can you bring God into this? Which for me means, if somebody asks me that question when I'm going on, it forces me to stop, and it really I find helpful. The next suggestion is to say, let's bring it to the step you're working on. Let's tie in the step you're working on, assuming they're working the steps, and if not, that might be a good place to start. I give sponsees reading and writing assignments. I will email them a question and say, please write on this for 10 minutes on the timer and send it to me, and we'll discuss it next time we speak. The other tool that I've used is we use it as sort of, I use it as for fun, but it really helps, is please describe what's going on in 10 words or less. Because it really forces all the, and then he, and then she, and but I, you know, give me the short version. And the other thing that comes up for me is not trying to judge it, but just trying to get a sense of it. And what I'll often say is, my sense is that you're not connected to what you're saying. Is that right? And because for me, if I'm not connected to what I'm talking about, I can go on and on and on. But if I am connected, it's very real. And if the person I'm speaking to is connected, it's a very different conversation than just hearing somebody go on and on. But the one thing that I found really helpful, and my sponsor used to do it to me, is let's bring God into this. Let's talk about how we can bring God into this. Because as we're taught in here in the 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs, as the result of these steps. It's a spiritual experience. That's the purpose of this program. And all of these tools are a way to get there. And I encourage you to take care of yourself in this manner.
What I do is I try to stick with I statements, and I exert a time boundary up front. I say, I really appreciate this call. I have until 20 after. Would that be okay? If they say yes, great. If they say no, I want to talk longer or whatever, we'll need to make it another time. So this way, when they're in the throes, they finally work themselves up to whatever it is they're getting to. We're at 20 minutes. I'm sorry, I did say I only have 20 minutes. I do not like to cut anybody off, but I do need to go. Rather than exerting that boundary later, and then now they feel shut down, which I can do. I ask myself a lot of questions in these things, like, how is God working through this person to give me a great growth opportunity? Because if I'm uncomfortable, I'm probably growing. I ask myself, what's going on with me? What is this bringing up for me that's a problem here? Can I be of service to this person? Do I really believe in sponsorship? These are questions I ask myself. And the only way I won't work with someone, if they're difficult, is if they interfere with my own recovery. If, like, they are consistently breaking the anonymity of other members, constantly talking about people by name and stuff like that, I don't work with them because I don't feel safe, because they may be taking what we're talking in confidentiality and bringing it to someone else and breaking my own anonymity because they've established that. And the other major thing that I've seen people have, because this disease is so powerful, is people with anger issues. If I feel it's going to be directed towards me because they're not working the steps fast enough, or they don't feel like they're getting it, I don't even know what getting it is, if that's directed towards me, it's not going to work for me. So if they interfere with my own recovery, so that's the only way I wouldn't work with someone. Okay. Oh, is there another question? Yes. Yeah, that would be easier than repeating it, I think. We'd save time.
So thank you all for this wonderful panel. I did want to just say that I want to share something first in what you all said. I really have a problem when people say they fired their sponsor. I just think it's so cruel, and it comes from such a bad place. I mean, I think we're all working this, and, you know, there are no stars, and it's okay to move on. So I just wanted to share that. But I also wanted to ask, because I was thinking about when you were all talking about how you use the tools, and I came out of the womb chubby, you know, and I grew up in a family that loved to entertain, loved to eat out, and so on. So, but also a very chaotic home, and I'm not going to get into that, but there were reasons, I know, as a 5-year-old, why I stood at, you know, this one draw with cookies and snuck cookies all the time. So I'm conflicted because I think it really helped me, you know, if that makes sense, that it was, you know, I couldn't, like, pour a martini at 5, so I ate cookies to calm me to deal with some of the burdens and craziness of situations. So if anybody could comment on that, or
I did use food to deal with my feelings because I wanted to feel better, and the way I felt better was by feeling nothing, and I was in such a mental fog when I overate that I used food. And for the record, I have never fired anyone, but I used an I statement, like, I don't think this is working. Is it? And then they get to decide whether they want to move on, or we decide together that I don't think this is working. I don't think I'm helping here. I'm not hearing it. Rather than saying, you are fired, you know, the famous TV thing or whatever. No, I just say, you know, not you're out of here or anything. I stick with I statements, and I don't even bring the word you into it. You hear that? I mean, I don't think this is working, is it? See, I don't put it on them. Because I need to take at least 50% responsibility for the relationship. So I did use food, but I don't use it now in that way.
Thank you very much for the question. I also used food to numb myself, used food not to feel, used food as a response for just about everything in my life. And when I came into program and by the grace of God, got abstinent and put the food down, what I didn't understand was that I would have feelings. And it was an absolute shock to discover that I had feelings all day, every day, about everything if I wasn't eating. And that was one of the traumas, frankly, of being in program for me, was having to cope with feelings, which is how, for me, I started using the tools. What I will say about the sponsorship thing that's interesting is I, years ago, had a sponsee who my sponsor thought was abusive to me. And she would call me and say, I'm not going to make it today. I can't do this. I'm not going to make it today. I'm going to die. I can't go on like this. I'm going to, you know, do something to myself. And I called her. It took me a couple of weeks of listening to this, and I called her on it, and I said, you know what? My mother killed herself. If you're really in danger, you need to call 911 or go to the hospital. I am not going to hear this from you. If you're having a difficult time, that's one thing. I'm not going to make it. Does not fly with me. It's not okay, and I consider it abusive. We got through that fine. She heard it. She understood it, but she never would have if I hadn't spoken up for myself. And similarly, in the meetings, when I started to have feelings, in this, I used to think about it as Arctic tundra that was absolutely frozen. And the pain of thawing out for me in recovery was horrendous. I really many times thought I wouldn't make it. And at 5 years of abstinence, had a really, really tough time staying alive for a while. But I also, this same sponsee at some point later, my sponsor directed me to fire myself as her sponsor. That was the only way, you know, that I could end the relationship. It didn't have to do with her. It had to do with me. So I said, you know what? I hear what you're saying. Let me just stop right here and say I'm firing myself as your sponsor. And believe me, there was dead silence at the other line. I said, I don't think I'm giving you what you want. I think you may work better with somebody else. I love you, and I'm firing myself. And we've become friends in the, you know, some years went by, but it really helped me as a way to deal with those feelings, those pesky feelings that came up when I stopped eating. So that kind of ties everything in, but thank you for the question.
Very briefly, I'll speak on the sponsor portion of it. When I start sponsoring someone new, I always try to, because it's a one day at a time program, I try to say, let's do this temporarily, let's see if it's a good match in the first place, if you want what I have and if, you know, you can relate to me and so on. So I always try to start it with temporary, and I always say to them too, is, look, you know, this doesn't have to be forever, you know, this is one day at a time. If I'm not giving you what you need, I'm not gonna be offended at all, if you want to move on and go on with someone else. And I find that to be really important to say to them up front, so that they don't feel like obligated to keep me as a sponsor, just in the sense that, just to, you know, make me happier if they think that there's someone else that they would want to have, sponsor them instead. And, well, you know, oftentimes it'll work out and it doesn't matter. And then oftentimes I've had a lot of sponsees where, you know, and sponsors as well, or it didn't work out and so on. And that's why I think it's good as a sponsor to bring that up. Yeah, no, of course.
I really appreciate what Josh and Diane shared today, and I want to repeat something Diane said about the feelings. Feelings pass like subway trains in a station. I think that is so New York, and I just love that. But the thing I thought of when she said that was so addictive, like, well, they pass like trains in a station because one will go by, and then there'll be another one right along after that. And that's what I was thinking. I'm going to have another thing. And about the temporary sponsorship relationship, sometimes people have asked me to sponsor them because, you know, you have what I want or whatever, until they find out what I have. And once they find out what I have, then, like, I don't want that, you know, because they don't want to make calls or they don't want to stay abstinent or make it the most important thing. They're like, well, what about my family? And I said, how good can I be present for my family if I'm high on food? You know, that's why it's so clear to me that abstinence, God-given abstinence, needs to be the most important thing. But I just love what they said with that. Are there any other questions? I think we're about the time, 10 minutes before I think we were supposed to finish. Okay.
Thank you.
Can we finish with a prayer? I like Josh's idea.
Oh, do we have more?
Thank you to our timer and to all for participating in this panel discussion. After the Serenity Prayer, would everyone please clear the room, as depending upon the timing, there may be another panel discussion right behind us. Thank you for allowing us to be of service. Is there anybody here from out of town, the further the better, who would like to lead us in the Serenity Prayer? Even if you wouldn't like to, is there anybody from out of town? Great. Why don't you out-of-towners lead us in the prayer? We heard him already.
Oh. I guess Renee will read it.
All of you out of towners. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back at first if you're worth it and you're worth it.
Thank you, Chris.